It's Friday, December 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, a space pioneer, politician, and American icon passes.
All the qualities that make a good ambassador, he has.
Donald Trump's latest cabinet selections draw criticism and praise. Also ahead, a small victory for U.S. environmentalists, country music, and the Grammys. It's all coming up on today's International Edition.
Godspeed, John Glenn. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3.
The liftoff of a U.S. Atlas rocket on February 20, 1962, topped with a capsule called the Friendship 7. A nearly five-hour flight around the world made John Glenn the first U.S. astronaut to orbit the Earth. Today, John Glenn has died at age 95. Glenn had been admitted more than a week ago to Ohio State University's James Cancer Hospital, according to the John Glenn College of Public Affairs. He was the last surviving member of a group known as the Mercury 7, seven military test pilots selected in 1959 to become America's first astronauts.
Yeah, we were competitors. Boy, were we competitors to try and get the different flights. Never was there anything any more tight than the brotherhood we had that supported each one of those flights.
After serving as a military pilot in World War II and the Korean conflict, Glenn was a test pilot on U.S. Navy and Marine Corps jet fighters and won a place in the first class of U.S. astronauts assembled by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, better known as NASA. Glenn also had political aspirations. He ran as a Democrat for a U.S. Senate seat for Ohio, winning it in 1974, and there he remained a member of the U.S. Senate until 1999. He was the oldest living former member of the Senate until his death. Catapulted into the spotlight by that 1962 space flight, Glenn went on to win numerous accolades, including honorary degrees at a number of universities, the Woodrow Wilson Award for Public Service, a U.S. Senate Public Service Award, and the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2011.
For many, many thousands of years, people had looked up and wondered, they'd been curious, about what was up there. Now, we must consider ourselves among the most fortunate of all generations, for we have lived at a time when the dream became a reality.
Glenn, always talking about space, made his final trip in 1998 while still a senator, and after persuading NASA to send him on a space shuttle flight, he was 77 at the time, and that made him the oldest man ever to fly in space. His participation in the nine-day mission was criticized by some as a folly, but supporters said it provided valuable data on the effects of spaceflight on an elderly person, as well as providing data that could be compared with Glenn's space flights from three decades earlier. John Glenn dead at the age of 95. As the tributes to John Glenn have been pouring out on social media, Michael Lippin has been following it. He's here with that story. Michael, how is Glenn being remembered?
Thanks, Jim. Well, one of the first to announce Glenn's passing was the governor of Glenn's home state of Ohio, John Kasich. He posted this note on his Twitter feed: John Glenn is and always will be Ohio's ultimate hometown hero, and his passing today is an occasion for all of us to grieve. Though he soared deep into space and to the heights of Capitol Hill, that's a reference to his 24 years as a Democratic senator, Kasich said he never strayed from his steadfast Ohio roots. And then there was this message from U.S. Space Agency NASA. We are saddened by the loss of Senator John Glenn, the first American to orbit the Earth, a true American hero. And then NASA added this phrase, ad astra, which is Latin for to the stars.
How are the nation's top political leaders responding?
Well, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump paid tribute with this tweet, his first of the day. Today we lost a great pioneer of air and space in John Glenn. He was a hero and inspired generations of future explorers. He will be missed. News outlets also have been tweeting President Obama's statement on John Glenn, and in it, Obama says, "With John's passing, our nation has lost an icon, and Michelle and I have lost a friend. The last of America's first astronauts has left us." You might notice a similar theme there from Obama and Trump, and that didn't go unnoticed for one U.S. political commentator, Anna Navarro. She tweeted this note, "It's been a while since I recall anything unifying us. Thank you, John Glenn, for your last gift to America, bringing us together in celebration of you."
What a nice thought. Well, the Twitter world also has been celebrating something else. What is that exactly?
Well, it is hashtag National Brownie Day, when Americans everywhere are supposed to gobble up as many brownies as they can. Okay, well, there's no real compulsion there, but I wouldn't mind having a brownie right now. And, you know, one of our colleagues, Dave DeForest, is rather good at supplying us with them.
Yes, he is. It's almost Brownie Day in our newsroom every Sunday here.
I think so. So back to you, Jim.
Thank you so much, Michael Lippin, with our look at social media. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. I'm out there as well at VOA Stevenson, and be sure to follow our international edition stream at VOA_IE. Among the top stories that are trending in Asia, rescuers search for Indonesia earthquake survivors. Quake of magnitude 6.2 strikes China's Xinjiang region. Impeachment vote set for embattled South Korean president. Taliban seeks recognition for Qatar office, direct talks with the United States. Cambodian fishermen hanging up nets as Laos presses ahead with another dam. You'll find expanded coverage of these and much more at the voanews.com website. And take the news with you. If you have a smartphone, try our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Among President-elect Donald Trump's latest decisions on his new administration, he named former Marine Corps General James Kelly to head the Department of Homeland Security. He has asked Oklahoma State Attorney General Scott Pruitt to take charge of the Environmental Protection Agency and Iowa State Governor Terry Branstad to take on the post of ambassador to China. Branstad is in his unprecedented sixth term and is the longest-serving governor in U.S. history who has enjoyed a more than 30-year-long personal relationship with China's President Xi Jinping. The current Agriculture Secretary, Tom Vilsack, has also served two terms as Iowa's governor and praised his successor as an ideal choice for the Beijing post.
He's tenacious, and he's going to have to be. He is tireless. He's going to have to be. And he understands and appreciates the importance of trade, and he'll have to. You know, I think all the qualities that make a good ambassador, he has, especially as it relates to this particular country, because he has a personal relationship with the current president. So he certainly deserves the right, if he chooses to do this, to do it. And again, I think that he is well suited for this particular job. And I think if he takes it, I think he will find it incredibly fascinating. It's an amazing country.
China's state-run news agency Xinhua said the 70-year-old Branstad has long nurtured a close relationship with China, having visited multiple times. China is Iowa's fifth largest export market. The state imported more than $1 billion of Chinese goods in 2011. Scott Kennedy, a China expert at the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the Vilsack assessment is correct, and the Branstad choice, if it clears the Senate, will be in contrast to some of Mr. Trump's words and actions that have alarmed Beijing.
In addition to being tenacious, he's going to be the good cop to Trump's bad cop, and he's going to need to let the Chinese know that Trump means business, but also that there is a path towards a better relationship down the road if China opens its markets more to American imports and investment.
Mr. Branstad's appointment, according to experts, suggests that Mr. Trump may be prepared to take a less combative stance toward China. Do you think so?
No, I don't think that's what this signals. I really still expect President Trump, once he's in office, and as we've seen even before he gets there, to raise the temperature against China in unpredictable ways on commercial issues and elsewhere. this pick, Ambassador Branstad, he'll need to help manage those tensions and see if resolution can come to pass. And he'll also need to report back to President Trump what the Chinese are thinking about all of these issues.
Of course, Scott, during the campaign, Mr. Trump spoke about China's quote-unquote currency manipulation. There's also, of course, the trade deficit between the two countries that equaled some $336 billion in 2015. China's been accused of dumping steel and aluminum in global markets. Will these issues cause problems?
You know, China's currency isn't being manipulated now. Actually, the Chinese are holding it up against pressures to depreciate. And the bilateral trade balance is a horrible measure of whether or not the relationship is fair. Nevertheless, there are lots of obstacles to American exports to China and Chinese investment, real issues that need to be addressed. And I expect the incoming president will use a whole variety of tools in his toolkit to put pressure on China with a variety of different kinds of trade remedies, limiting Chinese investment in certain areas in the United States, and other tactics to get their attention.
Fellow CSIS China hand Bonnie Glazer said given Mr. Xi's penchant to keep things close hold, it's important for the United States to have a reliable and direct communication channel with him. She said Branstad has met the Chinese leader periodically since 1985 and has had a personal relationship with him that could be very useful. Environmental activists and Native Americans are applauding the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' decision to deny an easement for the Dakota Access Pipeline, barring the line from passing under Lake Owyhee near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota. That is, until there is a full assessment of the project. But some activists worry that President-elect Donald Trump could reverse the pipeline decision after he is inaugurated on January 20th. Meanwhile, as VOA's Greg Flakus reports from Bismarck, North Dakota, the state's energy industry keeps producing oil and gas to be shipped out on trucks and rail cars.
After celebrating their victory, some activists left the makeshift outdoor camp. But many remained hunkered down against the bitter cold. Frederica Helmer, who left the camp after the decision was announced, says activists remain vigilant.
If need be, I think this community can stay there for a long time, and my suspicion is they'll want to make sure that this is in fact truly dead in the ground.
But about 300 kilometers northwest of Bismarck, pumps and derricks are a common sight. Despite the currently low oil prices, many companies still find it profitable to produce both natural gas and oil in what geologists call the Bakken Shale region. For one of the least populous and least visited states in the nation, the oil boom has been a blessing, according to the governor's spokesman, Jeff Zent.
You see the benefits from our natural resources, the development of our natural resources all over the state.
In a matter of a few years after the oil boom started, North Dakota's GDP went from being well below the U.S. average to 29% above average. Zent says some of the groups involved in the Dakota Access Pipeline protest are against fossil fuel development altogether.
You have organized groups who oppose what appears to be a very sound project, a project that actually provides one of the safest modes of transportation for oil. You know, that's a concern for not only the industry, but it should be a concern for everybody.
Zent says most people in North Dakota support the continued development of oil, gas, and coal, as well as renewable energy. He says people here have strong ties to the land and want to protect the environment, but that the Standing Rock conflict has created ill feeling.
There's a considerable cost to the government to provide public safety. Those costs are adding up every day, and I think, generally speaking, the people of North Dakota would like this to be resolved.
That may not come soon, however, as the assessment being carried out by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers usually takes months. Greg Flakus, VOA News, Bismarck, North Dakota.
If you would like to see more on this story, all you have to do is visit the voanews.com website for more. And just look up Greg Flakus, you'll find the story. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. And while you're online, be sure to check out our Facebook page. It's VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few. The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
This is VOA's International Edition. The nominees for the prestigious Grammy Awards were announced this week. International Edition's Sarah Williams talks to Nikki Strong of VOA One about how country music fared.
So, Nikki, were there any surprises?
Of course there were. It wouldn't be the Grammys if they didn't have surprises. So there were two immediate surprises that really jumped out at me. Sturgill Simpson's nominations for the all-genre category Best Album of the Year and Best Country Album of the Year for A Sailor's Guide to Earth. Now, what is so surprising is that he's been an outcast for the most part in country music because his music doesn't fit nicely into pre-established traditional or contemporary commercial country music categories. And he's been critical of the establishment, so he really hasn't gotten much airplay. He hasn't been acknowledged at all in any of the country music awards. So he's been almost off the radar. And so it's like the Grammys said, you know, you may marginalize your offspring, but, you know, for his innovative work, we're going to acknowledge and honor him and align him with superstars. He's going up against Adele, Beyonce, Justin Bieber, and Drake. That is major company.
Pretty stiff competition
there. Oh, my God. Yes, yes. And another surprise is that women did as well as they did. For the all-genre Best New Artist, there's usually a country artist, at least one in there. There are two this year, and they're both women, Maren Morris and Kelsey Ballerini. So I was excited about that. And then for Best Country Solo Performance, 4 out of 5 nominees are women. So you have Brandi Clark, Love Can Go to Hell, Miranda Lambert, Vice, Maren Morris, My Church, Carrie Underwood, Church Bells, and Keith Urban, Blue Ain't Your Color. Two other small surprises. I was surprised that for Best Country Album, Eric Church didn't get nominated since he did win the CMA Award for Best Album of the Year. And many critics were also disappointed that Margo Price was snubbed as well.
Any predictions?
Wow. Okay. Maren Morris was nominated for 4. She's been pitched and, you know, touted as the it girl. I think she'll win one. I think she will win at least, possibly for Best Country Solo Performance for My Church, or possibly Best Song. But the competition is really, really fierce. I saw her performance at the CMAs of My Church, and I thought it was wonderful. And I thought it really added depth to the song. And I think she might be able to walk away with that one. Keith Urban has 3. I think he may win for Best Country Album. Now, I'll be honest, he goes up against Brandi Clark, Big Day in a Small Town, Loretta Lynn, Full Circle, Maren Morris again for Hero, Sturgill Simpson, A Sailor's Guide to Earth, and Keith Urban, Ripcord. His album is great. I personally am just crossing my fingers that Brandi Clark will win this time because I think she's an incredible songwriter and a phenomenal talent who has yet to get her due. And I think part of it is because she's a woman and she's not a dolled up young thing. She's, you know, a grown woman. She comes as she is. She's comfortable in her skin and she has the goods and she delivers and she's well respected. And I think it would be nice for her to walk away with that trophy. But I think Keith Urban may actually win that.
Who are some of the other nominees?
Well, you have the Best Country Duo Group Performance. There's Dierks Bentley with Elle King, Different for Girls, Brothers Osborne, 21 Summer, Kenny Chesney with Pink, Setting the World on Fire, Pentatonix with Dolly Parton, a really cool version of Jolene, Chris Young with Cassidy Pope, Think of You. any of them could win. I have no idea. For Best Country Song, which is awarded to songwriters, you have Keith Urban, Blue Ain't Your Color. I love that song. Thomas Rhett, Die a Happy Man, another great song. Tim McGraw, Humble and Kind, one of my favorites that's already won awards this year. Maren Morris, My Church, which has like been an anthem for so many of us who live in the country. And Miranda Lambert's great song, Vice. I don't know who will win that one either, but we'll find out February 12th next year.
Well, you can hear music from these nominees and more on VOA One's Country Hits with Nikki Strong. You can also reach Nikki on Facebook and Twitter at VOA One The Hits. Thanks, Nikki.
You're welcome.
Blue looks good on the sky. Looks good on that neon buzzing on the wall, but darling, it don't match your eyes. I'm telling.
There's so much more coming up for the Grammy Awards. That was the country music part. We'll explore more of it in upcoming editions of International Edition, which you've been listening to in a variety of ways, either through voanews.com, streaming, downloading it, or perhaps on one of our affiliates. However you've listened to it, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook at VOA Now and Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thanks so much and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There have been significant accomplishments in promoting religious liberty at the State Department in recent years, said Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, David Saperstein.
Clearly, as you look back on my 2 years here at the State Department, our ability to assist Secretary of State Kerry in his finding that ISIL's activities in Iraq constituted genocide against the Yazidis, Christian Shia communities, and crimes against humanity against the Kakai and the Mandeans and other minority groups was a very important achievement here, and kind of had the impact of grabbing the attention of the international community.
This worldwide attention made it possible to hold two pledging conferences that helped raise over $2.2 million from countries around the world to help these religious minorities return home safely. The United States as a country will continue its commitment to the principle of religious freedom at home and abroad, said Ambassador Saperstein.
I am very optimistic that the robust efforts on behalf of religious freedom that has marked the last several administrations, Republican and Democrat, will remain a hallmark of our foreign policy moving into the future. It really shows the consensus view that religion plays such an influential role in foreign policy issues that we confront and must be addressed more effectively, must engage religious communities around the world on behalf of the values and interests that we promulgate.
Religious liberty is one of America's great contributions to the world, said Ambassador Saperstein. And as an American, I'm extraordinarily proud to see how many countries join us in that vision of the fundamental rights of people to live equally as citizens without regard to their religion. The United States is making a difference in the world on this issue and will continue to do so.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.